Good morning, everyone. Here we are. It is now a nice, cool, I guess cold, Thursday morning. Welcome, everyone, from the Explicit Measures podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. Welcome, everyone.
Yeah, good morning.
I was going to say for, you know, those in the Midwest or actually wherever, anywhere, I suppose. When we started this podcast, it was nice. You wake up, sun is shining, you go downstairs, you know, get yourself going. Now you wake up, it's like still feels the middle of the night.
It's dark. It is like, dark
it's
now.
It's still blackout. It's tough, man. The struggle is real.
For those of you who are my non-American friends, because America has the world's worst measurement system in all things.
And why?
Woke up yesterday, it was 32 Fahrenheit, which is minus 5 C. So it was cold. And crazy. It feels like winter has come very quickly here. It's supposed to warm up again, I believe, for the weekend. It's supposed to be back up to, I guess, 50, 60 again. So we're in that 15 C. So it's jumping back and forth now. So we'll have to kind of like just keep going to ride with it. Although my basement temperature doesn't change too much. So I'm pretty much good to go.
That is a nice part. If we just change the fall back and spring forward, like that would solve so much, especially because we haven't even done that yet.
I agree with you on that standpoint. I don't like springing forward and falling back. Changing your times just seems so silly for me.
That's where I thought you were going, was the time zone change.
Yeah.
Well, that's also very ridiculous. Why? And why do we do this again? Because we can farm everything with machines now, and it's like at night. It doesn't really matter. It just they're automated.
Do I like the sun going down at 4:30? I do not.
No, I do not. So not a good idea. Anyways, so
guess it's the only thing going on.
Yeah, true. some openers. This week was the Microsoft Ignite conference. That was the one I got to speak at. Tommy attended my session in virtual reality, and he does not like VR.
I think there's room for improvement. So
I think it's a budding technology. I do feel like it's a land grab at this point in time, because every company is kind of trying to put something in place to like make sure they have one of these things. You know, Microsoft got one now. Facebook's rushing to announce theirs. They're like, it's going to be really expensive. And I'm like, you're a big company with billions of dollars. Don't care. If you want to do it, do it. Don't tell me it's going to be expensive.
If any of these large billion-dollar companies needs assistance on adoption for their product,
come talk to us.
Listen to our podcast.
We've got some governance things, some instructional videos, having some Friday sessions to tell people how to use it would probably be very, very advisable.
Happy to talk. Just contact us on the mailbag. We're happy to talk to you.
Excellent. That's amazing. Any other announcements at NetIgnite that you guys want to talk about or heard about that you thought was interesting to go through?
I think there are a bunch, but I guess we just did like our most favorite one.
Sure.
I know what mine is, but I'll see what you guys say first. So
You're gonna let me see if I can take. I'm gonna see if I can take Tommy's right now. So
yeah, I know.
I think again, this has been a very hot announcement. The Power Apps pricing has now changed, and they're allowing you to do a pay-as-you-go kind of model, and it's also tied to Azure as well. So I think that for me, that was a big complaint I had around for Power Apps for a long time was, Power BI, I can light it up in an Azure A SKU and use it externally for people. Now we can do it in Power Apps. How cool is that? So I thought that was a really good move on their point. And as Microsoft keeps touting, you know, the size of market for making applications is huge. Really, really big. So that's a massive incentive, I think, to get people building more Power Apps. I really like the idea of that.
Pay as you go. Based on
active users a month.
If you sign in, you pay. If you don't sign in the app,
do an app.
You don't pay for that app. So basically they look at a month range of time and say how many people logged into the app. Now granted, that one user will have, you know, he'll log in that one time. It'll charge you, I think, what did they announce?
$5.
$5, $10? I don't know, something like that.
Something like
that. So it's like a price per user. So if that user uses it 100 times in the month, it's the same price as that guy who shows up once. So they're probably playing a game of statistics here a little bit where you're not going to be in their app every single day. But I do enjoy, I think it's a good move for them from a pricing standpoint.
Yeah, I'll just say that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. And also, because
like struggling. Have you guys ever spent a lot of time figuring out where your costs are in Azure?
True.
It is painful.
Well, it I mean, part of that is good planning as you put things in Azure too, right? Tagging things helps
to some degree, but like, So good move. Glad they're going to Azure.
Yeah.
Costco there, they'll be good. Yeah. Well, like somebody else's spreadsheet. Why are we spiking $1,000 a month? Why is this happening?
Power app.
What's this app ping power thing?
Why do we switch to $700 in something called demo app?
So it's cool.
Demo app. Awesome. Nice.
I love the flexibility. Big fan.
Mm-hmm. Anything else that hit you kind of as a
leaning on you guys, man. I live in a box.
I'll give Seth another fun one. Hybrid tables, I think, was announced.
Hybrid tables, I'm super thrilled about. I think we talked about that a little bit on the roadmap. So did they announce date?
I don't think they announced date.
It's just the now it's coming sooner.
Yeah. Sooner. But we're getting closer. So for those of you who do not know what a hybrid table I think is, and from what I understand, is it's this concept of we have import for a lot of data that's historical. So imagine data yesterday and older. There's a direct query portion for data that's alive or information that's very current. So as records are changing in your SQL database, you can have the most up-to-date records. And so now it's this table that has kind of two duality modes to them. A lot of it is imported, but a portion of it is in direct query mode. So you can actually pare down a portion of this. I've actually built a similar solution to this with two tables for a customer where one table is in import mode and one table is in direct query mode. And so we then use measures to span both tables. And so when we're doing like a line chart, if you have it on not today's data, the chart is hyper fast. It can load years of data and it's just snappy because it's inside import mode. And then you move the slicer to today's data and it takes a little bit because it has to go back to the SQL database and grab information out. But you now have real-time information and every time you refresh the page, you're getting all the latest data points for that, you know, whatever piece of information that you need. So I think it's going to be a cool solution, potentially could save me a lot of work in the long run. So I'm looking forward to that one. All right, Tommy.
That's exciting.
So they made some major updates to goals, or they're a lot of them are soon. Yeah.
You still think everyone needs goals? I still don't think goals.
Yeah. So it's but they're getting there. I think we need to start an idea or something to them about the target number changing. But what I think the biggest part that they did was Power Automate. That integration that we talked about that as being one of the deal breakers. And I think that came out of the box with like almost 8 or like 6 triggers and 9 actions, like update a scorecard, update multiple score. Yeah. Like, so you can kind of integrate that with any of your services. So we've talked about that where now you can actually write via Power Automate and update one of your goals.
Mm-hmm.
Update them, do a check in and put the number. So
this is the introduction of APIs. That's my opinion, right? There's APIs that are doing goals things in the background. What they've done first is expose them to Power Automate, which I think is a great solution. It's going to give a lot more access to not have to. I don't want to click every single button to make goals. I don't want to do every little thing. I want to automate as much as I can. That's the win.
So now you can automate updating of the goal number. And so there's a lot of neat things there. Something with permissions. Obviously, I think right now the last puzzle piece is really that target number and being able to view the target number over time and a little more integration with that. That's the last hurdle for, I think it's to be widely adopted, but I'm really looking forward to seeing what we can do with Power Automate and goals.
Tommy, you weren't excited about the Purview and Power BI better together story?
Purview needs. I've tried Purview, man, with Power BI. Like, all right, that doesn't really help me at all. So,
it's
expensive.
I mean, because that cohesion between them saying, you know, we'll track things in a service that you're using and the data all the way through to a report. You know.
Yeah,
could be worth it. Are there gaps there still?
Yeah, it's just the insights when you're actually looking at a report. Like, let's say you're looking at one of your reports, it's showing you the columns.
Yep,
and it'll show you the data sources. But that's really it. It's not like the metrics, all the dependencies on like a report to report kind of thing, or like what measures affect it. So
I think it boils down to Tommy's point there. Like, you can see the data model, I think, now, and now you can see the specific Power BI assets. So I think if I look at this image shots coming from the announcement, it lets you search for, like, you have a search bar, so you can kind of just search across all your assets. And then when you get there, you can actually see, like, qualifications. Now, what I don't know is, and again, can't quite tell, it looks like you can select a single data model. And in the data model, you now have tables of information, and you can see the individual columns that are there. What are the column names?
The scanner API does that.
Yes.
And that's free.
I know. And that's what I'm saying. I'm like, I think the scan, so this is where I think things are coming together, right? If you need like an environment where you know, scanner API just goes to show you what's there, right? If you need to write information about what these columns mean or what they name are or they define them, that's a different, like, that's not what scanner API is doing. So I think scanner API was, in my opinion, was brought so that you could do this kind of stuff with Purview. So I think you're going to see more scanner API type things. But I still feel like I'm missing, like, I need to know I need to go one level deeper. I can't just see the Power BI data model. Yeah. I need to go from model to page by page in the report, what's attached to what. That way I can data at least go through and do some analysis to say, hey, where is this one column used? Where is this one measure used? Can I delete it or not? I need a full picture of that suite. And I don't know if you guys saw, but Power BI Sentinel, Alex from, I think it was Purple Frog, it's Innovation Solutions or something like that. He was a sponsor for Ignite, and their company was. So Purple Frog was promoting themselves as like being to have this full solution, being able to do that kind of stuff. So like a Purview type thing, but all the way down to like the visual level, understanding what's actually in the visuals themselves.
I need some of that. Give some Alex some of my money.
I think he's got a creative solution for this. I think he's got a problem. He's solving a problem that hasn't been solved yet in the Microsoft ecosystem. I don't know if they're prioritizing it enough to make it happen. I think a lot of people are talking about it, but I don't know when it will get solved. Or it'll have to be a third-party solution. I don't know. Anyways, any other announcements that you guys felt like were relevant?
I think we should save that all the roadmap for another day.
We probably should.
Yeah. Remind me in next podcast to talk through one of my gotcha stories that I had this week. But we'll table it. We're far into this one, but you got to remind me next
week. Okay.
Oh, man, I don't want to wait now.
It's a teaser.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a teaser. Tune in Tuesday.
We put a cliffhanger 15 minutes in the episode. There's a cliffhanger already.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Which we'll forget
about. If you made
it
this far.
We're going to really forget about it next week. That's for sure. That's going to happen. So let's jump into the topic for today. Topic for today is just talking about, what does a help desk for Power BI look like? We've been talking about this concept of a help desk. How do you run it? What kind of, you know, what are the challenges in this? What does this look like? So, Tommy, frame us out here. What do you mean by help desk for Power BI? What's this mean in your mind?
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to this. This is something near and dear to me because I think it's so essential, but it's also one of those things where I think help desk and Power BI or business intelligence have had a weird relationship over the years. So when I'm referring to help desk, I think when we're referring to help desk, it's really centralized portal where users can submit requests for new projects, for new reports, updates, change management, support, and training. The idea or the real purpose of it is that there's a centralized location where basically all of the tasks and priorities and requests can be logged in a central location. And there's also that ability to kind of divvy out what needs to be done and document what changes are coming. So you have this one, in a sense, frame of communication with the stakeholder or the user, and basically say, here's all the things we're doing. Here's all, you know, here's how to request a report. There's something standardized where, hey, you're going to request a new report. You got to fill out this form. Then we'll do, you know, here's the status of it. That's kind of the idea. And I guess the idea for today is, I think two things for me that I want to really kind of get through is that why there's been such a weird history between help desk and business intelligence. And then what components should be in it? I'll start with this. So I have done more research on help desk and business intelligence than I would like to admit. And I have not seen any real solution from a help desk service provider where it's like a template or something kind of built for business intelligence.
I'd agree with that.
And that is always kind of, they have it for, I think, every other department or team. But I've not seen it for business. Usually it's like data science. It's either mixed with dev or it's mixed with your IT help desk, but there's nothing kind of specific for it, which again, I've tried to scour the internet and the webs for all this. So to me, there's maybe it's the idea of what BI was before, but I want to at least start with that is what is that relationship between help desk and business intelligence and that you've seen in the past? And why do you think there's a disconnect?
Well, I got a sleeper topic on you here for this one, because this is one where I'm sandbagging a bit. I actually ran a call center for about 4 years for a large Fortune 100 company. That was part of my job. And it was around being a technical expert for battery sales. So helping large corporations, you sell products and then people have questions about it, or there's issues or there's problems with the product and you have to resolve those issues. So I was the front runner. The buck stopped at me. So when I walked into the position, there was two people running the entire show. And by the time I left, it was about the amount of time of a half a person. One person could run the whole show. All of that was being done. So Tommy, to your point, right? I'm very aware of like the software that's out there for call center stuff, or at least help desk center things. I think the largest market audience is purely a call center type area, right? We have products where those calls are coming to us. And to your point, there's not like a really easy retooling of that. Maybe, you know, the BI market, right? There's centralized BI teams, just not as large of a market audience for that to be a support team for the broader organization. I do think there's a lot of practices that worked well for me in running the call center that work really well when you start thinking about what does a support center or look like for Power BI. So having a central location for knowledge made it way easier for me. And I can't tout this enough. You have to stop answering questions one-on-one with an email. That is not how you drive this stuff. If you want people to use your center of knowledge or whatever you're going to build around this, you know, BI center, you have to answer the question on a forum in a place, write up the answer in a location and send someone the link to where that answer exists. This is actually how, believe it or not, Power BI Tips started from this scenario. When I was doing Power BI initially, this is why I started Power BI Tips, because I said, I'm learning things and I'm not going to teach you people one at a time. Instead, I'm going to build a website. I'm going to put my knowledge there, and then I'm going to send you links to stuff that you're asking about, which here we are now, years later, and Power BI Tips is like my career, which is pretty cool. Pretty fun there.
So, Tommy, what is the difference in your mind between a wiki and help desk support?
Yeah, so I was actually about to say that, Mike, what you're referring to is more like a knowledge space or a knowledge center, and that's not what I would consider a help desk.
It's part of a lot of things, right? That's just one aspect of what we're doing here. I think to your point, what you were saying earlier was we need like a way of tracking and prioritizing and how to get stuff done. That all has to go along with the system no matter what. I mean, you've got to have a part of it.
And I think that I'm referring to specifically that the purpose or the actions of a user. I need a new report. I need an update report. I need an analysis done. How do I go about getting that started? And that's where the help desk goes and where the user is going to submit something that's going to be part of the project plan or part of the list of tasks for the BI team or the BI author. So obviously the knowledge space, I think, goes without saying. And we've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. We could definitely talk about it again because I am full agreement with you, but the help desk really is, you know, it's such an essential part that serves a different purpose, obviously, because unlike a knowledge center where that's going to be, I'm trying to find information. Maybe I can see what reports are available, how to do something.
Yep.
The help desk is where new reports get initiated or should get initiated and that development goes.
So you've described something interesting to me, which I don't, in my mind, isn't a help desk thing. Like, what is the difference between a knowledge repository and a help desk? Like, so you've described that you think that a help desk should be where people submit requests for reports.
So the help desk should be anywhere a user submits for anything related to the data or the BI space. So it's data integration, report updates, support, training, new report creation, change management, it would all go through the help desk. Now I am really interested because
based on your faith, it doesn't look like you agree. Let's hear what Seth has to say.
You just listed off a whole lot of things. What are those again? Submitting a request, process for where people can find information.
Finding information. Okay.
Slow down, Tommy. Slow down.
Submitting a request for a new report, updates to a report, or some, and the business logic may change, starts with the help desk. If they want support, like if they want one-on-one support or they want some training, they could do it through the help desk. Like, and then the other part of that too is like for anything that's related to the data, that is going to be something that a BI author, someone who owns it's going to do, it starts with a submission from a help desk. That's what I would say the difference is, or what the purpose of the help desk is.
Hmm.
And I'm going to let you. Yeah.
So I'm going to light this on fire.
I guess
it's just my experience is nothing related to like what I would term a help desk. Right.
Okay.
So a help desk in my mind is more of the IT distinct help desk, right? You have folks that are generalists in many different areas related to configuration of machines, right? They know how laptops and things like that. And you can provide them new information around installing a bit of software. Mm-hmm. And they go through a little bit of training to figure out like, hey, I'm going to go through and install the software. And then they start getting a whole bunch of requests of like, I have these problems. And then they build their own little wiki of like, here are the five main things we always see. And like what the lay user always runs into. So when you get a call, it's probably going to 95% of the time, it's going to land into one of these five.
Just
things.
Just restart your computer and
guide the user through that. And, you know, figure
move
it
on.
Out. The key part of that is the same process every time for every request.
Okay.
Right. And to address a lot of those, I guess, is one of the challenge points, I guess, I would say in a BI help desk is you would need individuals that understood the space because there's going to be variability in answering a lot of the questions between reports because the layout could be completely different or they could have elements that aren't there for other pieces. Or so you now need to ramp up your help desk individual to a higher level of understanding of what's going on in the reports to help somebody out first. Like second, I guess running and this is a dude who's never had a help desk, right? So maybe I'm just blowing holes into nothing, right? Like, is it helping you at all as the BI team that a request for a report came through help desk just from a like understanding the volume or what people are asking? Or isn't your immediate thing going to be to reach out to that team or person to understand what they actually want? Because it's likely they're not giving you all the information in a request. So what's the point of the help desk as opposed to just reaching directly out to your team where you have a process by which they have to submit something into, you know, a work item of Jira or something and that's managed and then you groom it and then go build it?
So I love that question, and I think I'm more looking forward to answering that. So,
cool.
Yeah. So here's the thing that I see I think essential for any BI user to use some centralized platform or system for managing requests by an organization.
I 100% agree with that.
So, okay. So number one is unlike like a help desk for, let's say, like IT, where it's like my VPN doesn't work or like I can't connect to Wi-Fi, where, you know, there's a software update where it's a pretty quick fix. It's usually to get help. Usually it's because something is broken. And that's, I think, how a lot of people have always seen help desks in the past. For a BI team to have a centralized place or the BI author, for one, making sure people are using the correct avenue, the correct resource to say, I need a new report. I need a new integration. We need to change the business logic, yada, yada, yada. Rather than having coming through Slack, Teams, email, getting coffee, someone calling you randomly, and now all these different requests to, you know, if you're building a report from the ground up, trying to manage all these different projects that need to be done. Because some of them are requests, some of them are projects, some of them are going to take a lot more communication. Having that centralized for the user to send it out, and then more importantly for the BI team to govern it, where they can validate if that's a request that's going to provide business value, rather than just saying, yeah, okay, we'll do it. They can actually scope out that initial request. And yeah, they will still meet with the person requested it. There's still a lot of communication that happens. Let's say not necessarily only on the ticket, if we'll call it a ticket, the scoping call, the development, but it has to be, in a sense, going through the process. I think number one, so the BI team can at least manage and say, here's all our requests. Go to the executive sponsor to say, some of these do not provide business
value. I was just writing that down, right? I mean, so to some degree, right? There's a request bucket, right? Here's ideas, an ideas bucket. Give us our ideas. What do you think we need to build from a reporting standpoint? And then you kind of collect them all, and then someone has to acknowledge, here's the list of things that people have been requesting. Our team will go through this and figure out if we're going to build it, right? So some of this is, I mean, so Tommy, you're taking a really strong approach around this. There's a team that's doing this, and I'm of the more self-service side of things, where I'm like, well, there's probably some reports that Tommy's team will work on, but as Power BI becomes more pervasive in the company, I have to imagine there's going to be other people who just need access to the data, and they'll build their own reports that may not be governed yet. And we may have to be careful with, you know, what's going on there. However, like, you need at least an area where you can say, here's what we're doing. And I think, to your point, Tommy, having that central area of where we have all the information is, or where all the requests are coming into, is very important, because now you actually can put KPIs around, how are we actually meeting the business expectations? What is the value this team's bringing? Oh yeah, we've gotten through 100 requests this month, this quarter, whatever. Here's what we resolved. Here's the new reports that we fixed or updated. You can now quantify the spend on the resources in that team to continually help the organization move forward. Data is now an asset. You have to treat it as such. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt there, but it's a really good point.
No, that's perfect. And like I said, so that's the one side of the coin. And we're just talking about the initial request. Mm-hmm. I think that's the first part of it. The other side that I think is not, I guess, communicated as much, or the underrated one to me, is that, and then allows the BI team or users to have more governance and call it authority, where they can look at a request coming and going, hey, show the executive sponsor, say, this is not providing any value to the business. This is going to take 10 hours to do, but it's not, you know, going to impact the business at all.
We're not going to put the fish visual inside your report.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just not,
exactly.
Doesn't
exactly
make sense. Or here's another report. So there's also a part here too, is you've already asked for something. We've already delivered it. Here it is on this other report. It doesn't work exactly like you want it, but here's how you can use this other report to get the same answer or something like
and
that.
Then you can, yeah.
Cause then you can start feeling that and saying that's the help part, right? I mean, we're doing help on many parts, building Power BI, getting new reports, and actually teaching people what's around our existing reports so they can use them correctly. Right.
Yeah, and it gives you authority compared to if you said no to someone on Teams. We're like, no, we're not going to work on that. It's, in a sense, that tone's different, where you meet with a team and you can show your boss or the sponsor going, here's 5 requests that we got from sales that, like, you know, that is going to take this X amount of time, but do you see the business value? And then there's pushback, which I think is huge, because we shouldn't work on everything, because not everything is going to be, again, that marginal, either save money or make money.
Yeah, so, I would agree.
And we're just talking about the initial request right now.
Your first request in the request form, whatever it is, you know, chatbot, or, you know, if it's a Power App or whatever, or now that Power Apps are on demand and you can pay for them per user, maybe you should just light up a Power App for all your requests. But one checkbox in the bottom of that thing should say, does this request save money or make money? If it doesn't check those two boxes, put it at the bottom of the list. It just doesn't get done.
So what in terms of I'm hesitating and umming a lot in here because my thoughts are jumbled, and I'm probably getting hung up on just the help desk term, which I'm going to try to move off of. But if we're talking the request itself,
sure.
Why does that have to go through a person versus just you've defined a process and here's a form you fill out and then, you know, submit to a project manager or somewhere to create a work item.
It doesn't have to go through a person.
Where something that gets killed.
A help desk is a couple of things, right? So when I ran the help desk, there was websites we put out, pages we put out that were like help desk maintained, right? We put things out that were not human facing, or they were human facing, but they were like not maintained by an actual person. You don't have to make a call. I don't have to talk to someone and say, I need this request done. So help desk is, I'm using it in a much more broader sense because it really, in my opinion, the help desk is part center of excellence. It's part, a place. It's a part where you put processes down, document the process. I did a lot of that. Here's how you request a new form. Go to this website, do this thing, enter this stuff, hit submit, and that gets added to our backlog. So, and then, you know, then the process is, hey, well, every week on Wednesday, Tommy and team sits down for 2 hours and grooms the backlog down and sees what kind of requests are in there. And then we figure out and prioritize them. Part of that is saying, hey, every user you submit a request, here's the notification your request has been submitted. Mm-hmm. Here's where we're at with it. You know, we're booked right now. We're working on a really big project. We don't have time to get to this request. Here's a report that may meet your needs somewhat. So I think maybe you need to open your mind a little bit more to like, it doesn't have to be just talking to people to do help desk. It could be a bit more. I mean, one of the things I would think would be really cool here in this space, I think it's untapped right now, is Power Virtual Agents is a really interesting application.
Okay, so we're talking an interface between the BI team and the business.
Those simple requests should be automated.
A person.
Yeah.
Although it could be.
Correct. I mean, it would be really nice to have a general Power Apps or Power Virtual Agents module here. I mean, think about this one. If you had a lot of these general questions, like how do I do drill through? How do we go through all these things? And then like in that comes out as, we just have that done. It's automated. The simple stuff should be automated.
32 minutes into the conversation. I'm now up to speed. Thank you.
Cool. So what's your opinion?
So how was Ignite?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. The process, having a process, right? You know, or an interface that says, hey, you know, would you like to create a report? Here's the form you fill out. Like, well, here's our response to you and how we're going to interact with you.
I can't tell you how many flow diagrams I made and called. That would be the one thing I think I did a lot of. Flow diagrams. Everything was a process. Everything was do this, then this. Here's a decision point. Do that. Like, if you're going to handle a return, these are the kind of things we need. Check this, this, and this, and this. If these things are checked off the box, then we can issue the return. If we can't, then go this route. I mean, I did so much process documentation. It was ridiculous. Every other day, I was writing another process document. So I think, I mean, if you had to replace help desk with another word, it would be build process. it's all about building a process.
Well, it's the traffic manager.
Yeah.
To some degree, right? Like you're building a strategy and a structure, especially as we talk about the adoption roadmap and all the different pieces and teams, right? So you could potentially, like, you would have to have somebody understand how to make a request, or if they need help with something, which team to go to, or which, you know, so.
And you may funnel that.
Thing could definitely be an automated, like,
oh, totally.
This needs approval. Well, this needs to go here, you know. That
and
kind
if you,
of thing.
And, sure. and you, sh- yeah, you should use with whatever the system you're using, ideally something where there's a help desk portal where it's like, you save it on your teams. It's kind of really promoted. It's like, this is where you go if you want to work with the BI team. And there's the categories. You know, it's like, I need a new request. We have a new data source we need to add. If any of those questions get submitted and it's organized, but it's also easy for the user to submit a request. But it's user friendly.
So to your point set there, I want to make another point around what you just mentioned, because I think this is very relevant. Like, let's just say I have a question about an existing data set. One of the things that we've been talking about this whole governance conversation for the last month or so has been just identify who data owners of things are. And I think it's very important that whenever a model is published, there's at least a data owner minimum of one that's attached to whatever is being published. Because when those questions come in, hey, this number doesn't look right. Hey, this da 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 da. Either the help desk takes that request and has an automated routing to go directly to that individual who owns the data set that's being governed, or you point that person to a repository or a location where, hey, here's all the data sets and here's who in charge of them. Here's their first, here's their primary, here's their secondary. If you have questions about these data sets, go to these individuals. That's where the questions are answered.
Right.
Because you have to go back to that source. It will take Tommy longer to get to the answer on some of these why is this table not work? Or when I add these two columns together, it gives me a funny number. Tommy shouldn't be the one answering all those. The guy who wrote the data set or the one who's owning it, again, I think also as like a BI team, you need to have people on the team that own certain areas in that BI process. I think, Seth, you were talking about like a lot of that. That's thinking like people just, you know, we're going to designate an area of our BI process, our pipeline, our data pipeline, and you will own this part of the pipeline, or you will own these three data sets. And then everyone can get familiar with them, who's owning them. And then as the requests come in or questions from the business, whatever that may do, that person is answering those questions back, and then they can handle those tickets.
And this is absolutely part of governance too, where again, it has to be really standardized good. And managed.
Yeah.
And then we're actually launching tomorrow. I think if today's Thursday, a new help.
I think it is Thursday today too.
And basically we're setting up this automation where depending on the request type that a user would submit, it will send out a request form, mm-hmm. a customer voice, and it'll basically like, you know, like that they have to answer, or we're not going to touch that request. It's basically like, what are you trying to solve for? What are the KPIs? Will you need this data? A few questions. Once they submit it, it gets pre-populated in a Word document and then gets appended to that ticket.
Yep.
So now we have our scoping document that we're going to work with when we talk with them.
Yep.
But it's going to follow that procedure every time. There's no request that I'm working on where it's like, I have to, like, which email was that? Well,
So someone on YouTube, Kevin Smith is talking about, he goes, in his company, he has this concept of you have to build out the requirements. So a request comes in, you build out some of the requirements, and then part of the process, again, this is about building process, part of the process is going to that person's manager and saying, hey, we're going to build this thing. You need to give a sign off. You need to give at least a green light onto what we're doing. So that way that manager understands what's happening at that user level. And I think that's a really great idea is sometimes your business may need something like that. You may need another level up or someone's huge. Boss to kind of like get the buy-in. Yes, this is what we're doing. Yes, I'm going to allow, you know, to provide my employee help. He will help you get this done because that's part of, you know, what they need to get done for their daily stuff. So, I mean, engaging managers, I think it's a big thing.
We were getting so many requests from sales once we're like, and it was all these random requests, but it was so many that were just filling it up where we basically put that, at first, it was only their sales manager could submit a request to the ticket, but then it basically went to, we set up automation where if a rep or a lower level than a manager submitted a ticket, their manager would have to say yes, like this is good kind
yep.
of thing.
Yep. So it kind of, it tamps down some of the requests, right? Because there's a lot of weird requests. Like this button looks red. I want it to be blue for my client and their color. And like, well, we don't need to deal with that right now. That's not essential to what we're talking about. We're not talking about the entire, there's bigger fish for us to fry.
Right. So the other part, and I mean, this is amazing too. We haven't even talked about this. We just talked about the initial request. You know, we're not even talking about the other part of this is like the whole workflow of building a report or working Power BI with it. But I think before we go there, I have to ask, like, why do you think there's a disconnect, or why are there no, I don't want to say resources, I guess, resources, no, templates,
no money in it. That's not enough money in it.
I disagree wholeheartedly with that.
There's not enough.
What do you mean?
The size of market and how many, like look across all the organizations that are BI teams that are out there. The reason why Jira hasn't just lit up this whole BI and business intelligence call center thing is no one's made the case yet to say, hey, we're gonna spend X number of more dollars, X number of millions more dollars to make sure you have this stuff set up for us.
They don't need to create another product. They just need to create a few templates and a blog on it. There's not even that.
Well, it sounds like Tommy needs to create a template and a blog on this, and then we can. Well, Power BI Tips would be a great place to host that.
If you wanted to create in Jira a new project, a new board, I think you choose from like over 50.
Yeah.
Not one of them is for business intelligence. If you search business intelligence help desk on Google, and like I said, someone please surprise me, because the last time I did, there's no like really standard art. I don't know, Mike's going to do that right now. Don't get too down the weeds right now. You go follow, just text me on Twitter or whatever, however people say it these days, on like, here's what a help desk for BI looks like. There's nothing out there. Mm-hmm. There's, which to me is, this is the same thing that happened when governance wasn't really a thing for Power BI. And I remember like, what does a blueprint look like? And this is like 2017 and there's nothing. So I guess let me ask you guys, like, is it because they're, again, it sounds, I don't think it's about the money, but you can create a template. Like there should be some resources out there, but mm-hmm. Why hasn't there even been a minimal investment by either the community for writing something on this or by help desk providers?
Cause Tommy hasn't done it yet.
A template.
Moving on.
Oh, great insights here. I'm glad.
I don't think there's been much of a need for it. I don't think people aren't thinking this way before. Maybe this is like not to say that this hasn't never done before, but maybe there's this, we're seeing the rise of self-service BI to another degree. You didn't need this kind of stuff when you were doing everything in Excel. You'd have a different way of ticketing this.
So then this raises the question then, is there a reason because maybe the help desk is not the best solution? Because obviously as it is now, it doesn't meet all the needs. So is this something lacking or is there a better solution?
I don't think there's anything better at the moment right now. I think again, most of what this learning stuff I think has to happen has to boil down to person to person kind of training, person to person kind of learning, right? The only way this stuff scales, the only way you can take someone's job and make them more effective is to document things and put them in common area, build process around it, automate as much as you can. This is the sole reason why Power Virtual Agents exists, because there's not enough people to answer everyone's questions. And there's a whole litany of questions that are common that can be answered with a chatbot. That's why we do these kind of things.
I'm referring to mainly the process of managing a request, a new report build, and having it in a system. The virtual bots wouldn't be a solution for that.
Virtual bots can answer some questions, right?
It can help you for knowledge.
And it can help you make decisions too. So, virtual agents is supposed to be like, hey, did you ask your manager about this? Has your manager approved this? Do you have, here's a list of things where you can go look at, or hey, here's the form to go fill out to start off a request. The bot can redirect a lot of those kind of things.
I think it'll be really much easier for Jira just to build a template than to set up virtual bots.
I don't know. I don't really see this being a big issue as much as you do. Seth?
Okay.
I'm just digging in my silence here through the adoption roadmap, struggling to find the help desk reference, right? And it is in user support, in internal support as a bullet item, but it squarely aligns with my thought of an IT help desk, which is interesting, right? Because if we think about this topic, no, I think to Tommy's introduced, I'm always right. Tommy, I like this idea though, right? Because modern IT help desks are not designed to answer or help facilitate the rollout of what we're trying to accomplish here in an organization, right? So where I'm struggling is by nature, a lot of what we're talking about today is just inherently stuff the BI team handles. Like you wear so many hats on the business, in product management, in product ownership, in delivery and development, in engineering, like we are the spectrum, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the need for having, like, if you're building a help desk, why isn't the conversation like, hey, you do need somebody that understands how we're building things, understands a bit about the reporting, understands where to direct people, and knows the ecosystem of BI, because otherwise all you're doing is putting a gate, an unnecessary gate on your solution and adoption within the organization, because you're forcing what is inherently a group of individuals not qualified, and not in a mean way, but like they're not going to know where to direct things. So you're going to enforce that your overall IT team, or support desk or help desk, be the gate for getting back to a team that could answer the question.
Yes.
And unless you're clearly defining that, even if you gave that to support, you would need like 1, 2, A, B, this thing, just the same way that they're addressing or helping people in general.
Correct.
And it seems kind of like, thinking about that, it seems kind of messy to try to take what we're building from a data adoption soft, all the information within a company and putting it in a realm that's been built for software, hardware, and figuring out like the IT support type issues, right? So I'm on board. I'm getting on board here, you know, from the standpoint that maybe it is, you know, maybe it's a person on the BI team, but like their role is, you know, how to direct traffic. Mm-hmm. You know what things are out there that all the lay users don't know, and then you can adapt and move on. And maybe that's the individual that's also helping with building some of the process, or mm-hmm. being part of, you know, the documentation and making sure that, you know, the wiki is up to date and all of the pieces that are kind of not BI developer centric, but knowledge specific to BI implementations.
Yep, right? I agree with that.
That makes a ton of sense, because then you get fast response times. People know what's going on. It's not a bunch of bloat. It's here's what's going on, because it's a direct liaison with the team. Where I get hung up with some of the request stuff is, as long as it's a pass through to the BI team making decisions. Like, you're not going to have a help desk make decisions on, like, is it a valuable report or not.
Right? No,
but
correct.
They can say, hey, you know, you submitted this form. I know so-and-so is reviewing that. They'll get back, you know, our SLA, internal SLA, and that is a couple days, you know, here's where it's at, and just help facilitate. And it's an interesting thought, because I think a lot of these are all being parsed between many different roles right now. And you're just, you get this seamless stream of, you know, back and forth between these teams and external users, where, mm-hmm. you know, I'm the guy who absolutely, if you're going to roll things out in a bigger, more organized way for the lay person, you know, it's, this would be in a really pivotal role to have somebody that's the touch point for an organization to be like, I don't need to know that there's, you know, a COE and that there's champions in all these departments. I just need to know Tommy. And Tommy's going to direct me to the right place, or I know that I can go reference this stuff in the wiki, or even potentially, you know, be the person like, hey, I'm from sales, new person. I was told that there's this report out there. Do we have something like that? And then, you know, simple permission granting, right? Mm-hmm. Like
licensing, all
access.
That, yeah.
How do you get access to, you know, a particular report, or triage a simple problem? You know, stuff like that. I'm on board.
I think,
by the way,
I think it's very interesting
roadmap,
because I think this is very interesting, because we talked a lot about what, you know, call center, help center type stuff are. What I think you just described was more like a center of excellence, or a portion of
but
that.
I was digging into that, right? Because, like, which was my other question, like, does this belong as part of, right? But in the adoption roadmap, right, it falls under user support. I looked under, like, is this a COE thing? I don't think it is. I think the COE is a higher level development of how you implement potentially in different areas, and they might have different rules, or they might have different, you know, standards or access methods or permissions that are required before they get access to reports. And that would be something I think that you filter into a wiki that a help desk person would be able to support.
Agreed. So I think they're closely related. I wouldn't put them
absolutely.
Two separate things.
Yeah, all these things are very,
I mean,
the information for that comes from multiple places.
Agreed.
Governance,
that's all the point I was...
the pipelines, you know, process that they have to follow. Yeah.
That was my only point there.
Mm-hmm. And when Jira and Confluence with your help, like the help center, when someone's typing in like the summary or the description, it can actually pull up pages from a Confluence space. So seamless integration. Yeah. So we're not sponsored by Jira, but Jira, make a template if you're listening. So
listening can go talk to Jira now.
They'll reach out. But this is also part of not just the governance, but also the user adoption, because once something's submitted, one, they have the confidence. This is building user trust, because one, they know where to go for requests and they know it's going to be managed. Second, once something's being worked on, all of the logging of here's what we're going to do, the expectations, here's you know, based on what we talked about, here's what we're going to work on. It's all in that ticket, in that flow, and they can respond in the centralized area. There's not going through Teams or a Word document that someone put together, you know, trying to find like, oh, we forgot that one requirement. Or so it's aligning expectations, but it's building trust. So they know the status. They can say, no, that's not what we talked about.
Yep.
And they can sign off all on the same plate.
do you feel, Tommy, that at some level, Like, just asking people to fill out a help desk ticket mitigates some of the requests.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, adding a little bit of resistance there is helpful, I think, because it really makes people think critically through, like, what am I really asking for? What do I really need?
Yes, especially for a report from the ground up. This requires they fill out that customer voice.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because if they can't answer the common questions like, who's this report? How long is it going to run? What's the business value? And if they can't answer those questions or write it down,
shouldn't be working on it.
Right. So, and again, this part of this is governance, but also part of this is that user adoption too. So,
good point.
So, do you think the help desk should be I still find it interesting that after all these conversations we've had about governance, help desk, center of excellence, call center, like all these terminologies that we have. They still haven't been clearly defined because I think we kind of use a lot of them interchangeably. That's another topic for another day. But idea for the help desk for submitting requests, should that be a requirement of any user organization's adoption strategy?
I would think so. Even for a small team, even if you're managing it in heaven forbid, a SharePoint list or Excel sheet, right? Even if you're managing requests at a simple level, I think at the end of the day, whatever organization you're in, however large you are, you want to be able to prove that you're making value to the larger organization. So I think just tracking the requests, and I did that as just in general in my business, right? When I was working not a call center and just doing my daily job, if people came to me and part of my role was just to support other teams with what we were building in our department, right? I tracked all those things. Every help thing that came in, I just logged it in somewhere, and it was just all personally for me. But then when people came to review time or the review part of the year, I can say, here, look at all the stuff that we did. This is all the things that we built or created or did that becomes measurable and that adds value to or the weight to what you were producing. So you had a process. So again, I would 100% think if you're a small team, you should definitely figure out how to track it. If you're a big team, go find a tool that's going to help you track it. And I think ticketing is just the way to go regardless. Seth, seems like you disagree.
No, I don't disagree. What I'm trying to think about is we're very specific in the BI space. And I'm just making sure that all of the adoption roadmap and things we talked about are all centralized around that key piece. And I think the answer is yes, right? Mm-hmm. So I think this conversation brings up what is kind of just the... not oversight, but the elephant in the room kind of thing. Like, we're building all this strategy, you're building all this, you know, thing to go out in the organization.
Yep.
And what I don't see in here is, like, I see a small bullet of number 3 help desk where, you know, go run the initial request through IT. And I think that, like, in this conversation, I think that's a point of failure, because if you go through all this strategy and implementation, you're going to build these, you know, teams or responsibilities and existing people, even in smaller organizations, and then rolling it out to the layperson, you have to assume that's going to create a volume of work, a large volume in information work for people to, like, get answers. And this topic, I think, is very relevant related to how do you support that? At least saying we're expecting this volume.
Right.
And this person is going to assume the responsibility of answering a flood of questions initially. We're going to automate as much as we possibly can. We're going to build out wikis and redirect people.
Yep.
But you should assume as an organization, especially as a larger one, that this workload is going to be built, and that flood of, like, answers and questions has to be answered in a really effective way. And it's probably going to require people's time or a position to fill, because it's not something that's going to be easily supported within the organization without creating, like, major thrash. And I could be wrong. Maybe there's an element to this that goes through an existing help desk, but I think we're making the case that it shouldn't, and that, like, you're going to get more relevant hands-on support or better support from an information to information team rather than somebody who has a data or information issue going through IT technical support.
I don't think so, I think what they were meant for that comment, this is how I read that comment from the adoption roadmap, was use the ticketing system that IT already has. Those tickets then are automatically routed to the BI team. That's how I read it. But that could have been wrong on there. So the idea here is typical organizations already have an IT service desk, help desk thing. People can go there and submit requests already. It's already, people, companies already bought it. It's ready
keyboard,
to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. They already got it going. That infrastructure is set up. So, and I think what the article, or I think if Melissa wrote that part of it, was what they were saying was that system's already available. Maybe tap onto that, use that as a launching point before you get your own. Don't go out and go just buy Jira right out the gate, because you've already bought it somewhere. So use that short term. Those requests automatically get routed to Tommy, even though he's not in IT, he's the BI team. So, this is a BI request. Okay, we'll handle that and we'll give it over to Tommy. That way you can have time to when the request was made, to when it was delivered. You can start prioritizing these things. That system usually has metrics around how long it takes to resolve issues and all that kind of other stuff. So I think that's what they were trying to get to at the point there, because it's... that system will be better than me writing stuff down in Excel sheets.
Actually, they do a pretty good job of calling this out.
Yeah. That's how I was reading in terms that of workload. That comment.
Yeah. Well, here's what I would say. If you could do it through the product that IT already has, mm-hmm. I think that's more than fine. We were actually using it. Well, honestly, as long as it has enough customization features for BI.
Yep.
So if it's pretty static, where it's like it's gonna look exactly like an IT, you know, like with the categories and the statuses and what it can do, then maybe you look at something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe then I go customize it.
Let me
alter a little bit. I think if you use existing structures, that could be possible as long as there's enough process paths, which you would have to create anyway in adoption roadmap.
Correct. Agreed.
I would say if you're going to use an existing IT support system because you want to keep it centralized, you need to make sure that you have somebody on the team that understands this new area.
Agreed.
100%. They're going to handle and or build that team knowledge as opposed to creating a separate one. But it is called out. I think it's the stress here is just making sure that you can't roll this type of new process into IT without some major gaps in understanding of how to triage these, which could be very problematic for the organization if you're trying to roll things out and you don't have a team that knows how to support those things.
I mean, or
address the easy things quickly.
I mean, some things that we did in my prior organizations was we had a person who actually sat. So we had an individual from IT, but their salary was being paid for by the business. So the business paid for an individual in IT. That their salary was from the business side. So that way the business could dictate, hey, this person's going to work on XYZ things for what the business needed. However, this is an IT-centric person that has all the powers of the IT, all the back-end things. They've been trained on all the IT purposes, like all the training. That's very helpful. Because now the business or a business unit has the ability to direct that resource on things that they need to get done to get their job done for a daily basis. And now they're following a lot of the governing IT pieces. So to your point, Seth, yeah, totally. Let's bring up someone from IT, but then their salary technically should probably be paid for from that BI team. And that way that BI team can direct, use that person and help them build any kind of process.
Which if you think about it, is exactly kind of still this topic,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
All you're saying is we're going to work within an existing infrastructure of centralization as opposed to having our own, but
correct.
You could build your own.
You could.
We're stressing the importance of having a knowledge person area for the business to be able to streamline their requests.
Agreed.
Or issues.
100%. I think with that, we've definitely burned through a full hour on this one. For those of you who are, excuse me, rough voice there. For those of you who are following along, listening online, we appreciate you. Thank you very much for joining us for an hour long spathering of Mike, Tommy, and Seth. We just blabber out our mouths about the help desk and call center things. Hopefully we found some insights there as we wandered through this topic. For those of you who are listening, we only ask one thing. We appreciate your listenership. If you don't mind, please find someone else. If you found value from this, if you laughed at Tommy, if Michael was being a goofball and it made you laugh or you found something funny there, then please go ahead and just share this with one other person. that will help us grow the audience and help us keep finding good new topics. And then, Tommy, where can you find the podcast?
So if you're watching live right now and you want to listen again or share with maybe, I don't know, Jira about what they should do.
Hey, Jira.
You can subscribe on Apple or Spotify and just make sure to like and subscribe. If you're listening right now and you want to join the conversation live, you can subscribe to Power BI Tips on YouTube and LinkedIn. We always have our future episodes scheduled, so you can ring the little bell to notify you and watch us live at 7:30 in the morning, Tuesdays and Thursdays.
And if you're from Jira, feel free to go to PowerBI Tips/podcast and enter your information there so we can contact you about the forms you need to make your tool better. They won't do that, but that's okay. Yeah. Thanks, guys. See you next time. Yeah. Bye.